You may proceed.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm John Walk, along with James Weiss-Carver. I represent Seabass 2 before you this morning. This case involves the interpretation and application of Title 58.1's provisions on enforcing real estate taxes through judicial sale and the intersection of those provisions with Title 15.2's provisions regarding community development authorities and the collection of their assessments. Specifically, we contend that the trial court below misconstrued key language in Section 15.2-5158, subsection A3, that says that CDA assessments should be collectible, quote, at the same time and in the same manner, close quote, as the locality's real estate assessments. Now, the baseline of this analysis needs to start at 58.1-3965, which is the provision regarding judicial sales to collect outstanding tax assessments. The code provides a lot of enforcement mechanisms to localities, civil suit, garnishment, etc. But one important protection that is afforded to the landowner is the fact that the right of judicial foreclosure on the tax lien is suspended until December 31 following the second year of delinquency. Now, in this case, we don't need to get into a lot of mathematics about when the deadline expired, because the city conceded below and conceded in briefs before this court that with respect to the real estate taxes of the city of Fredericksburg, its suit was absolutely premature. However, the argument that was advanced below and before this court was that the city had the independent ability to sue on behalf of the CDA to collect its assessments because they were outstanding by more than 2 years. That then takes us to squarely 15.2-5158, which in subsection A3 says very plainly that the ability to sue on behalf of the CDA should be done, quote, at the same time and in the same manner as the locality collects on its real estate taxes.
Counsel, let me stop you right there if I could.
Yes, sir, Justice.
That section talks about a special tax. Now, A5 is when it talks about special assessments. Is this a special assessment or a special tax?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, that argument is not, I take it you're saying, well, we really go back to 58.1-3965 and use the term tax in there. Very plainly in 15.2-5158, it distinguishes between the locality's taxes and the assessments of the CDA,
right.
Although frequently the language is used to call them special tax assessments.
Right, what does that mean?
Special assessments.
What's a special tax assessment? Is that
again, if you go back to the bill of particulars filed by the city, they plainly call these things special assessments. It was only once the case got before this court that they started mixing in the reference to special tax assessments. My answer, quite simply, to your question is if you look at the code section we're dealing with, it plainly distinguishes between the two, distinguishes between real estate taxes versus the assessments of the CDA. And it says the CDA collects only at the same time and in the same manner as the locality's regular real estate taxes. So I would submit it doesn't matter which language you use, you're all talking about the same thing. I hope I've answered your question.
Well, I was not sure whether under A5 the city could even enforce the assessment through a tax sale. It looks to me like A5, there may not even be any authority to do that.
Well, that's an interesting point, Justice Millett, and I'm liking where you're going with that, but that's not something that was briefed below or before this court. The ruling that was appealed in our assignment of error was that the court misconstrued A3 and specifically the reference to at the same time and in the same manner.
Let me follow on that question, though, because as I was reading it, I was coming to a similar conclusion that perhaps a CDA assessment doesn't have, shall we say, the same dignity or same power that a local tax has.
I certainly agree with that.
There would be a distinction between what you can, the enforcement mechanisms.
I certainly agree with that in the sense that, for example, on real estate taxes, there's the ability to bring a personal suit against the taxpayer and obtain a personal judgment versus I firmly believe the CDA assessment solely function as a lien on the land and there is no personal liability for CDA assessments. So I emphatically agree that that distinction does exist. The best I can say in response to the question is that the argument that was before the trial court and the assignment of error that was brought before this court presumed that there was an ability to sue on behalf of the CDA to enforce its lien, but that it was conditioned by the language in 15.2, 5158A3 that said it had to be brought at the same time and in the same manner as the locality's real estate assessment. Our argument as to what that means is going to sound ridiculously simple, and that is that it means what it says. It means literally at the same time and in the same manner. The way you would apply that in practice would be simply if it is capable of being sued for outstanding real estate taxes, and there are also outstanding CDA assessments, then as part of the same suit, at the same time, and in precisely the same manner, the CDA assessment should be enforced coupled with the locality's real estate tax assessments. Conversely, if the suit would have been premature to bring on behalf of the locality's taxes, which this suit was conceded to be, then it is also premature on behalf of the CDA. And that is our argument in a nutshell. Now, I know I'm going to sound like I'm repeating myself a little bit here, but just to break it down a bit, key principles here are that you use the plain meaning rule. The city also concedes that another important rule of construction is you construe the statute as written, not as you wish it were written, or not as you might think it might have been better written. And also that you should give effect to the entire provision and all of its terms and endeavor as best you can not to render any part of it superfluous or meaningless. We believe that the city and the trial court violated all of these rules in the construction of this statute. For example, the use of the word and. It says at the same time and in the same manner. This means of necessity that you're talking about two different things. They can't be the same thing. And that both halves of the equation have to be satisfied. In this case, we cite it in our brief. It's in the appendix at page 137. There's a very curious statement, the ruling from the bench by the trial court, where the judge actually said, I don't think at the same time means at the same time. It means in the same way. And our contention, very simply, is that is not the plain meaning rule. That is not applying a statute as it is written, and it is not giving effect to all of its terms, because, in effect, the trial court and the city have rendered meaningless the reference to at the same time. And they are applying solely the second half of the equation, and that is the reference to in the same manner.
Under your reading of the statute, then, the special assessment taxes, or whatever we're calling them, could never be collected by judicial sale on a piece of property if the regular real estate taxes weren't more than 2 years.
Thank you very much for asking that question, Justice McClanahan. That's exactly where I was going with my next point, and that is the city has raised in its brief this doomsday scenario that your question goes with, that a taxpayer could game the system by simply constantly paying the real estate taxes and leaving the CDA assessments outstanding, thus suspending them forever. That could not occur without the affirmative cooperation and agreement of the city treasurer, and let me explain why. First of all, I do want to mention that it's an illogical premise in the sense that our client is in the business of developing and selling real estate and can't possibly sell lease, finance, or do anything with this property while these liens are piling up. So the idea that we would purposefully game the system in this fashion is completely illogical.
Well, let me ask you this. Excuse me. I was just going to say, but wouldn't it make sense that they would just let them build up until they sell it, and then when I sell it, then I take the lien off of it?
I understand your question, Justice Goodwin, and I understand that the court needs to deal with all possibilities and not just the ones that make sense. So let me address the next piece of it, and that is Code Section 58.1-3913. Specifically requires the treasurer to apply all payments to the oldest outstanding assessment. And so the only way that the assessments and the taxes and the assessments can get out of sync is if the treasurer deviates from 58.1-3913. Now, in this case, the treasurer did deviate from that statute because the taxpayer made a conditional tender. And this was the subject of a prior appeal to this court, record number 131575. It was a case U.S. Bank, which was the trustee for the bondholders, sued the city, and, by the way, my clients as well, having to do with this very issue of the application of my clients' tax payments. And the holding of the court below and the city's argument below was that the statute is subject to the common law of payments that says whenever somebody makes a conditional tender, the creditor has the choice of either accepting or rejecting the tender. If they accept the tender, then they are bound to apply consistent with the conditions that were coupled with the tender. And that was done in this case. However, importantly, in response to your question, Justice McClanahan, and yours as well, Justice Goodwin, all that would have to happen in this case is for the taxpayer to make a conditional tender and for the treasurer to reject it, because there is no obligation on the treasurer to accept a conditional tender. So if there was a hint of a taxpayer gaming the system in the fashion that your questions hypothesize, the treasurer would simply reject the conditional tender and say, I want an unconditional tender, which I will apply and connect in conformance with the statute, or else I'm going to foreclose. And when they foreclose, by the way, the taxpayer's right of redemption is conditional upon payment of all liens. So that's why this couldn't possibly occur. There's one other answer to
that. Why do you think the treasurer would be concerned about collecting those assessments?
That's his duty under the code and also under agreements. There is actually an agreement between the city, the treasurer, and the CBA in this case, which is in the joint appendix as an exhibit to the bill.
To the detriment of the city not receiving their tax money.
I'm sorry, just...
To the detriment of the city not receiving its tax money.
Well,
when you make that tender, as your client did, you're saying, well, the city doesn't want the money, instead we're going to sue you.
Well, again, the treasurer should follow the code, and the code addresses this very issue. Let me make one final point in my remaining time, and then I'd like to reserve a little bit of rebuttal here, and that is the General Assembly has also provided a safety valve. This is the third part of the answer to your question, Justice McClanahan, and that is 58.1-3965.2 allows the locality to decouple the two and to specifically allow independent suit on behalf of the CBA, but it requires local adoption, which the city conceded below and concedes again in its briefs before this court, never occurred. So if there was a situation where someone were gaming the system, the city simply activates the code section that's already on the books and solves the problem. I would like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal unless there are further questions. Thank you.
You have a minute and 34 seconds.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lucas Hobbs, and together with John Wright, I represent the city of Fredericksburg, Virginia, in this appeal, which involves the admittedly and severely delinquent special tax assessments that are owed to satisfy $25 million worth of bonds. The circuit court did not commit any error when it held that the landowner's property was subject to sale to satisfy those special tax assessments, which together with...
Counsel, let me stop you right there.
Yes, Your Honor.
What is a special tax assessment? The code talks about a special tax, and it talks about a special assessment. You've already told me that this assessment is to pay this $25 million bond. So what is a special tax assessment?
Special taxes and special assessments are used in the CDA context interchangeably. They are essentially the same, and I think this is the question you raised with Mr. Walk. This case was litigated and in the court below and has been briefed in this court with the understanding that those concepts of special taxes and special assessments are the same thing.
Well, wouldn't it be great if we could clear it up in an opinion, though, and straighten out whether it's a special tax or a special assessment? Wouldn't that be better?
Well, I think perhaps this offers the court the opportunity to say that they are essentially the same thing, because not only have the parties and the circuit court...
Wait a minute, just a second. I thought a special assessment was set up when you set up the bond, and then they can make an installment payment on the special assessment. But a special tax requires a yearly ordinance or proclamation by the city that they're assessing a special tax yearly. Isn't it? Isn't there a distinction between the two?
I don't think that there is. Under 3965.2, the General Assembly has used special taxes and special assessments interchangeably there. As you read on in 15.2-5158A5.
A3 and A5 are the two sections. A3 talks about special taxes and A5 talks about assessments.
A3 does speak about special...
taxes.
Special taxes. Thank you. Let me look here. I know I pulled that section out. A5 speaks, in the very first sentence of A5, speaks about special assessment.
Right.
But then it goes on to equate, it said the General Assembly, the language used is, it equates taxes or assessments.
So you think that means that they're the same thing?
Yes, we believe
okay.
Special taxes, within the CDA context, special taxes and special assessments are the same thing, and they are the functional equivalent then under 15.2-5158. And the city's resolution 0587, they're the functional equivalent of regular real estate taxes. CDAs, like this, the one here at issue in this case, exist throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. They allow for infrastructure and for other improvements that are paid for not by the tax base as a whole, but instead are to be paid for by the landowners' properties that are specifically or directly benefited through these improvements. They come into creation. They exist only upon the request of those landowners, and they do contribute significantly to economic development here in the Commonwealth. The statutory analysis, which the Circuit Court got correctly, because the Circuit Court provided interpretation of this language that gave effect to the whole of the statutory framework. And we're required to do that whenever we interpret statutes. And the Circuit Court looked first at 58.1-3965, which provides it's the familiar default rule that we go back to any time we have one of these judicially ordered tax sales. And it provides for the sale of real property to pay all delinquent taxes on that real property whenever any taxes are delinquent. A short time after that, we find 58.1-3965.2. And this was enacted in 2011 by our General Assembly as emergency legislation. And that's important. I want to talk about that here in a minute. But what 3965.2 allows a locality to do is to adopt an ordinance that speeds up or shortens our default two-year time period and takes it down to 1 year that the locality must wait before it subjects the landowner's real estate to sale in order to pay for the delinquent tax, delinquent assessment, delinquent levy, whatever it might be. Now, the landowner, Mr. Walk, has said that section is the only way that the collection of special assessments can ever be severed from the collection of general regular real estate taxes. But if you look at the beginning sentence of that, it starts out, 3965.2 starts out by saying, quote, in addition to the authority provided by 58.1-3965, subsection A, and then it goes on to say that the locality may adopt this ordinance to shorten the time frame. If the locality did not already have the power under 3965A to sell the property after a two-year period of delinquency, it would be meaningless to say, well, you can shorten it to 1 year. And again, one of our statutory construction principles that we know is that we must not interpret language that would render any of the legislature's declarations to be meaningless. And if we don't have, the city didn't have the pre-existing power under 3965A to sell after 2 years of delinquency, it would be meaningless to say, and you can shorten it to 1 year. The exact same introductory language is used in 3965.1. And that is a statute that would allow a city to pass an ordinance that would say, instead of waiting 2 years to collect on regular real estate taxes that have been delinquent, it allows them to shorten it to a period of only 1 year. Again, it leads off with that same exact language. Now, we would never say to the city of Fredericksburg or any other city that had failed to adopt an ordinance under 3965.1, wait, you're out of luck, you don't get to go and sell the property after a 2-year period of delinquency. We wouldn't say that because we would rightfully look back and say, well, you have the power under 3965.1, but that's in addition to what you can do under 58.1-3965A. And just as that language in 3965.1 has that meaning, that yes, this is something extra you can do in addition to your rights after a 2-year period of delinquency, it has the exact same meaning half a page later down in the code in 3965.2. If a locality cannot enforce the payment of the special assessments in a timely and prompt fashion, the CDA may be unable to meet its debt service on the bonds that were issued. And I mentioned earlier, 3965.2 was enacted as emergency legislation, meaning it went into effect immediately in March 2011. And that was because the General Assembly recognized the great importance of a city or a locality being able to promptly and timely recoup funds so that it can, in fact, meet its financing obligations.
Under a CDA. Because CDAs are almost always tied to a specific revenue bond that's paid for out of that CDA, and then with the locality's promise as the secondary source. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I'm not a bond lawyer, and so I don't want to try to wade in and start guessing about the details. But these bonds are not set up to be general obligations.
Exactly, they can't
bonds.
Be. They can't be so, under our constitution. So, but you set up a CDA in a large undeveloped area, typically to put in your infrastructure, and you're putting in the infrastructure that you don't want the locality's taxpayers to have to pay for. And so whoever it is that's managing that project then goes out and issues bonds or it obtains its financing that way, and it's tied to the assessments. So if you have adopted such an ordinance, it's understandable why you would want to have a quick trigger before those bonds go into default. How do you then bootstrap your local taxes? That's a different question. If your local taxes are not 2 years delinquent.
Well, I don't think it's a bootstrapping argument, Your Honor. The General Assembly has used this term of art at the same time and in the same manner. They have used it not only here in the CDA context, within 5158, it also appears in the city's resolution 0587. The General Assembly has used, although this is a case of first impression for the court, we're dealing with language that local governments across the Commonwealth have come to rely and come to depend upon. This is the same language the General Assembly has used in the context of school borrowing from the VRS, in the context of taxes that are levied to pay bonds that are issued under the Public Finance Act of 1991. And when the General Assembly has used that language before, they have intended that the levies that are issued in those cases, that those be collectible on their own merit, that they be due on their own merit, without reference to or dependence upon, interdependence with the regular real estate taxes.
Where does it say that in the code?
Well, that's not part of the codification language, Your Honor. That's the codified language, and that's what the General Assembly's intent in doing that is, because localities have come to depend upon these sources of revenue.
How can you tell the General Assembly's intent, and how can we consider the General Assembly's intent unless there's an ambiguity?
I didn't hear the first part.
How can you tell the General Assembly's intent, and how can we consider the General Assembly's intent unless we find an ambiguity within the plain language?
As far as the first part of the question, Your Honor, I believe we can look at 3965.2. We clearly know that the legislative history there was that the General Assembly was very concerned, and that's why that was emergency legislation.
Why, how do we know that? just because it was emergency legislation?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the fact that the General Assembly wanted to make sure that those provisions of the law were immediately applicable informs us as to the General Assembly's intent. With respect to the intent of the General Assembly, I believe that the interpretation, the principles governing interpretation, tell us that interpreting statutes, that we must divine the legislature's intent, and we do have to use the words, we do have to look at the language that the General Assembly has used, and so we cannot rewrite the language, so we are left with at the same time and in the same manner. That's the language that we must look at. We must look at all of the statutory framework, however. We cannot focus on one word or one phrase. And the landowner's argument here improperly puts all of their proverbial eggs in the at the same time basket. The interpretation that we're advancing gives meaning to both at the same time, which adopts both the timing requirement as far as the billing schedule for regular taxes, for levies, for special assessments, as well as our default 2-year time frame, unless the locality has adopted an ordinance under 3965.1 or 3965.2. With respect to it, in the same manner, our interpretation gives meaning to that language because that language means that the that language invokes the notice, the sales process of 3965, together with the possibility of installment payments by the landowner, together with the landowner's redemptive rights. So our interpretation...
Well, wouldn't at the same time then mean December 31st of 2 years after the taxes are due?
Actually, it would not be, Your Honor. The City of Fredericksburg has adopted a fiscal year that runs from July to June 30th. So because of that, the December 31 time frame means June 30th.
Does it say that any place in the code?
I believe so, Your Honor, but I don't have the site at the ready for that. But the city has adopted City Ordinance, I think 2-491 provides for that. Even that, were that not the case, the special tax assessments here have not been paid since fiscal year 2009. And so under even under the December 31, were that to be the applicable date, the lawsuit was still timely that was filed.
Respond to the conditional tender argument that your opposing counsel brought before us.
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to that argument, the payments that were rendered by the taxpayer were applied at the taxpayer's request to real estate taxes and not to special assessments.
If the treasurer had rejected that conditional tender, then if the taxpayer made payments, it would have been applied back to 2009 for the CDA, would it not?
On these facts, yes. The prior treasurer did accept the taxpayer's offer as a conditional tender. Since that time, the Attorney General has issued an opinion last year in 2013 and pointed out the statute does require that payments be applied to the most delinquent, whether it's called a tax, an assessment, or a levy, that it goes to the most delinquent. Now, that's the case.
So the fact that it's 2009 was the choice of the City of Fredericksburg to not apply it back to 2009 simply by accepting the conditional tender rather than rejecting the conditional tender.
I would say it was the willingness of the treasurer to comply with the taxpayer's request. I can tell the court that had the money applied to the taxes been applied to the special assessment, it would have satisfied only a very small portion of the assessments. I told the court at the beginning that we were dealing with roughly $2.7 million in assessments and taxes. More than 2.5 of that was assessments. I believe my time is ready to expire. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. Rebuttal.
Thank you very much. I'd like to follow up on Justice Millett and Justice Mims' questions about A3 versus A5. Having had a little bit of a break to review A5, very interesting observation that A3 talks about special taxes, A5 talks about special assessments, and as Justice Millett pointed out,
A5 talks about nothing about bringing any suits. It says that special assessments are a lien, but says nothing whatsoever about bringing any suit. So if the court were to apply A5, then the entire suit should be dismissed because, again, the city conceded absolutely below that the suit was premature with respect to its own real estate taxes. The hook it hung its hat on was the CDA special assessments. And in that regard, I would simply point the court to Joint Appendix pages 12 through 15, which is the city's own bill of particulars, where they consistently, as in maybe five or six different places, referred to these things as special assessments. It was only when they got in their briefing before this court that suddenly the nomenclature started changing to special tax assessments. Also, in response to Justice Mim's question about the conditional tender, I would recommend to the court simply checking out the record in 131575. It's called U.S. Bank versus City of Fredericksburg, and in it will be the city's briefs where they abundantly supported.
Could I ask you one question? Sorry to interrupt you, but your time is up. So let me ask you one final question. If we agree with you, would we dismiss this case without prejudice? Because the city can certainly file again right now, and the two-year delinquency would they be able to sue on, wouldn't they?
Justice Millett, yes, as to the dismiss the case because it was premature, and yes, as to without prejudice in the sense that I'm not saying the city can't ever file on these things. I'm just saying that this suit was premature. I also contend that the applicable deadline is June 30 of next year, but that was an issue that was not resolved by the trial court. Irrespective, there's no question but that this suit was filed prematurely and should be dismissed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We pray for reversal and dismissal. Thank you.
Paul Walensky.